What up?
What up, what up, ladies and gents, boys and girls, you are now tuned in to a brand new episode of Sportsway with Dre Day Podcast. I am your host with the most, the Hood's ESPN, Crystal Street's Golden Boy, Dre Day. What's up, what's up, what's up? This is episode 289, episode 289 of Sportsway with Dre Day Podcast. I want to thank everybody for their continued support. Keep it going, keep it flowing. This episode here, I am going to give my recaps from the Final Four and the National Championship game. I'm not going to lie to you, it's going to be more female talk than male talk because I really didn't care for the Final Four or the National Championship on the men's aspect this year. The female one was the one for me. My eyes was glued to that one. Not even going to lie to you. I'm also going to throw some NBA talk in there as well. And I'm going to try to go through my WrestleMania recap as quickly as possible. I don't want to dive into that one too much. I'm going to just give my opinions on the matches that I saw and, you know, grade them the way I see fit and then keep it moving. But got to speak on the women's Final Four and National Championship game because let me tell you something. These women showed out this weekend. And first of all, I just want to say congratulations to the women of LSU, the Lady Tigers. I actually made an error in my second to last episode. I said that Tennessee and LSU had went against each other in 2008 in an all-SEC national championship game. That was wrong. That was an error on me. I owned up to it. It was actually Tennessee against Stanford in the national championship game. It was Candace Parker against Candace Dupree. Tennessee had went up against LSU in the national semifinal of that year. This championship that LSU has, not only was it their first time in a national championship game, but they also won their first national title as well. So it was their first national championship game and their first national title. So definitely congratulations to the Lady Tigers of LSU. And with that being said, I might as well say congratulations to the UConn men's basketball team. They were the best team throughout the whole tournament. Unless you were from Storrs, Connecticut, the same thing with LSU. Unless you were from Baton Rouge or Storrs, you didn't have neither one of these programs winning the national championship. Or you were a fan, or you were a fan of theirs. You did not have these two programs winning the national championship. So the fact that they did it, congratulations to both of them. Congratulations to both of them. I kind of enjoyed the fact that a team that nobody expected to win won. Now on the female side, obviously, I actually wanted South Carolina to win. I so wanted them to win. Now let's get back to the women. Both Final Fours were amazing. Both Final Fours were amazing. Virginia Tech in that first half looked like they was going to walk away going to the national championship game. I don't know what it was, but that late third quarter, fourth quarter, LSU made the adjustments. They made it their business to make sure that Elizabeth Keatley did not get involved in that fourth quarter at all. Georgia Amore, A.A. Moore, basically had to try to do things on her own, basically. The LSU Tigers, they showed out in that late third quarter, fourth quarter. Andrew Reese did her thing as usual. Alexis Morris did her thing as usual. She's basically been the unsung hero in this tournament. I know all the attention went to Angel Reese, rightfully so, for her to have, I believe, 34 or 35 straight games with a triple-double. Now, think about it. In college basketball, I think on average, you play 39 games. Well, if you get to the national championship game and you win, I think in total, that makes you 39-0, if I'm not mistaken. So for them to get to 39 games and 34 or 35 of the games you had a double-double, that means only 4 or 5 games you didn't. That's amazing. And they weren't no little double-doubles either. They were monstrous double-doubles. Hell, there was some 2020 double-doubles in that matter. But for LSU to go out there and do what they do in that national semifinal in the national championship game was nothing but amazing. And again, South Carolina had an amazing season. Unfortunately, they suffered the same fate that UConn suffered, I believe, in 2016 when they was trying to go perfect. And in the national semifinals, they wound up losing. Now, I watched that game. And I know it was some people that were saying that how, oh, the refs, you know, was cheating. They was favoring Iowa. No, the better team won. The better team won. There was no excuse. Caitlin Clark did what she usually do. She went to work. You know what I'm saying? Whether it was scoring, whether it was rebounding, whether it was assists, the South Carolina defense, they couldn't do nothing about that pick and roll. They couldn't do nothing about it. Aaliyah Boston, who was the National Player of the Year last year, got 2 quick fouls. Now, the second one, okay, it could be questionable, but needless to say, when she left that game, people thought South Carolina was done. But with the players that they have, Cardoso came in the game and did amazing. Whether it was scoring, whether it was rebounding, whether it was blocks, Zaya Cook. Listen, if Zaya Cook would have not played in that game, then it would have been dark for South Carolina. Because once Aaliyah Boston got hurt, she took the initiative and said, okay, yeah, I'm a senior, but I'm not ready to go home yet. So now I got to push the narrative. Now I got to cook. And she did. Close game towards the end. And then again, Iowa pulled it off. The better team won. No excuses. The better team won. So a lot of people's bracket was done for right after that. Mine's included because, again, I had South Carolina winning. Now we get to the national title game. And we get Iowa against LSU. Now, I'm going to be all over the place with this because it's so much to talk about other than just basketball when it comes to this. And for those of y'all that's been paying attention, I'm quite sure you know what I'm talking about. Close game at first. And then South Carolina, and then LSU just took over. Simply put, I think the score was 102-85, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's probably the highest scoring national championship game in women's NCAA tournament history, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. Again, you're going to have some people out there that make excuses. Obviously, the people that were rooting for Iowa, you're going to have some people out there that make excuses and say, oh, the refs did this or the refs did that. No, the better team won. Is that simple? We have to stop making excuses. Now, Alexis Morris did her thing. Angel Reese did her thing. But for me, the unsung hero of that game for the LSU Tigers, for me, the unsung hero was Carson. She was the unsung hero. She played 22 minutes off the bench and scored 22 points, draining them from the three-point line. She took six threes, made five of them. She was the X factor in this game. And that's kind of what LSU needed. Like, we know Williams is going to do her thing, who's another unsung hero, in my opinion. I know for most people, Angel Reese and Alexis Morris, they're the ones that get the bulk of the exposure for LSU. Johnson ain't nothing to slouch with. Poole was amazing on defense. She was amazing on defense the whole tournament. But Carson was the X factor. Okay? Now, you get to the Iowa side. They had some players do their thing. You know Caitlin Clark's going to do him. I mean, do her. But those turnovers, when you're so ball dominant, chances are you're going to turn the ball over a lot. And she turned that ball over a lot in both games, whether it was against South Carolina or LSU. But for people out there that want to make excuses and say the refs caused them the game, no. The better team won. You cannot make excuses. The better team won. Now let's get to the elephant in the room. I'm going to be all over the place with this one, so I hope y'all ready. Taunting. Trash talking. Me coming from a sport family, whether it's basketball, whether it's baseball, whether it's football, hell, even, I mean, I know Monopoly is not a sport. I know Trouble is not a sport. I know Uno is not a sport. I know Spades is not a sport. I know Dominoes is not a sport. But you still trash talk, though. If you're playing amongst your peers, if you're playing amongst your family members, it's going to be some trash talking involved. That's just how it goes. It's a thinking game, too, as well as it's physical. You know what I'm saying? Caitlin Clark, who has been the focal point of this NCAA season, rightfully so, did a lot of trash talking and a lot of taunting this tournament. I remember one game in particular, I believe it was the Elite Eight, she was doing the You Can't See Me. Now, a lot of people, when they reference it, they say the John Cena, You Can't See Me. I'm here to tell you that there was someone before him that was doing that. And that rapper would happen to be Tony Yayo from Southside Jamaica, Queens, G-Unit. In fact, I'll take it a step further than that. There was a hype man in hip-hop, probably the greatest hype man in hip-hop history. He goes by the name of Flavor Flav. He was also doing that. But everybody kept saying John Cena, so that was the narrative that, you know, everybody ran with. But for me, it was Cena, Yayo, and Flavor Flav. But that's neither here nor there. Then it was a game against Louisville. I believe it was in the Elite Eight. Her and her friend on the other team was going at it with each other and trash talking. Shut up. You down 15 points. Now, when she did it, it was viewed as passionate, Mamba mentality, all the positive words that you can think, oh, she's such a competitor. All those things came up when she did it. We then get to the game against LSU. Angel Reese on LSU kept pointing to her ring finger, saying she's about to get a ring. She did the You Can't See Me to Caitlin Clark, even to the point where she was following Caitlin Clark and doing it. Now, you got all these people saying it's classless, it's unprofessional, it's not ladylike. You even had some people saying she was a piece of shit. I think his name was Keith Obdeman, whatever the hell his name is. Hopefully I said it wrong, but, and then you had the Barstool CEO saying something. You see the double standard that we have to deal with in this country. When a white woman did it, when a white girl did it, it was okay. But when a sister chose to do it, now it's deemed negative. Now, again, this is no knock to Caitlin Clark whatsoever. I have been following her since her freshman year at Iowa. I remember her freshman year, the question was, who was better between her and Paige Beckers? So I know her since her freshman year, and every year she's gotten better. She won National Player of the Year this year, rightfully so, deserving. So this is no knock to her at all. But in these tournaments, she started the trash talking, and it was deemed positive. Nobody said nothing negative to her when she did it. But as soon as Angel Reese does it, now the floodgates done opened. Now, great comedian Chris Rock, he just put out a special on Netflix called Selective Outrage. This is another case of selective outrage. You see one thing and you're okay with that. But at the same token, when this person does it, now it's an outrage. Now it's a problem. Now it's too much. Now it's, oh, was that really necessary? Selective outrage. Now, Caitlin Clark, she was being interviewed on SportsCenter. She had no problem with what Angel Reese did. And I knew she would understand because she's a competitor. Like, for those that never tied up their sneakers and stepped on that basketball court, or stepped on that diamond in baseball, or stepped on that gridiron on the football field, they don't know nothing about this. They don't know nothing about trash talking. You know what I'm saying? They have no idea what that shit is about. That's what you do when you're in a competitive sport. That's what happens when you're in combat. Trash talking, that's just how it goes. But see, it's not the athletes that got the issue. It's the people on social media that got an issue. And these are probably the same people that probably never played a sport in their life, and they're the first ones to complain about something. But at the same token, yes, it is a double standard. Because when the females did it, it was a problem. But yet, we see males do this all the time. We see the men do this on every avenue. Whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's baseball, nobody says anything when they do it. But when the women do it, why they gotta do that? That's not ladylike. No, it's a competition. It's competition. If it's all right for the males to do it, then it should be all right for the women to do it. More of a reason on why I was so okay with it was because this was the first time that I can remember that a woman's Final Four was more intriguing and more hyped and talked about than the men. Nobody gave a fuck about that Final Four with the U in Connecticut and San Diego State and FAU. Nobody cared about those games. Now, yeah, San Diego State had a walk-off. Congrats to them. But nobody really cared. All the talk was about the women's Final Four. The women's Final Four. The women's national championship. Let me point out some numbers for y'all. And see, this is what... And see, this is what gets lost in the translation when it comes to this, because it sucks. It's unfortunate that this had to happen. Like, it's so much more to speak about with this. Like, like I said, I'm gonna be all over the place with this. The First Lady of the United States, Dr. Jill Biden. I'm going to give her the respect. I'm going to call her by her actual moniker. She's a doctor. Dr. Jill Biden was in attendance for that game. I don't know what made her come up with this conclusion. I don't know what made her come up with this theory. I don't know what made her come up with this idea that she thought that, oh, I know the champs are supposed to always come to the White House, but I'm going to ask Joe if we can invite Iowa as well. Really? Since when do they invite second place teams to the White House? Now, again, I've been following sports since I was 5 years old. That's 32 years. Y'all can do the math on that and find out what my age is. I've seen NBA Finals. I've seen World Series. I've seen Super Bowls. Hell, I've even seen NHL Championships. I've never seen runner-ups go to the White House. I've always seen champs. I've always seen champs. I've never seen a runner-up. Even college basketball, I've always seen runners-up. So I found it very odd that this year you chose, okay, maybe, you know, we should invite Iowa too. Now, if you were really paying attention to this Final Four and national championship game, you weren't blind. You saw that South Carolina had predominantly an all-black team. I believe they probably only had two Caucasian women on their team. LSU, the same thing. Both of those programs, their team was predominantly black. Probably one or two Caucasian girls. Iowa, every girl on their team was Caucasian. I believe probably one girl was caramel complexion, but everybody else was Caucasian. So I find it very crazy that now all of a sudden you want to invite Iowa to the White House. It's flat out racist. Flat out. We all can see that. And the crazy thing is, for someone who's been in politics, right? Not me. I'm talking about the First Lady. For someone who, I'm quite sure her husband watches sports. Now again, he's just became the chief of command, right? The commander in chief. But he was a vice president before, right? So he was in the White House for more than 8 years. When those teams was winning championships and his term as the vice president, which was from 2008 to 2016, I don't recall losers ever showing up to that White House. It was only winners. So I found it very crazy and very unconstitutional that she uttered out that, oh, we should invite Iowa as well. Why? Because they look like you? And then she threw out the whole, oh, both teams played hard. No, they didn't. They damn near got spanked by almost 20 points. That ain't playing hard. See, again, I play sports. Well, played sports. My playing days are over. But when a team is getting, when a team is losing by almost 20 points, we got some nicknames for it. Ass spanking. Spanked. Dog walked. Mad names that you would call when a team was getting their ass beat by close to 20 points. So where did she get this whole thing about they played hard? The score didn't show that they played hard. The score showed that they got their ass whooped. There was no reason for her to say that. None whatsoever. Now, Angel Reese got a hold of that. And on Twitter, wrote three laughing out loud emojis and wrote a joke, which is exactly what it was, a joke. Because I don't understand how anybody that was around her thought that that might be a good idea. Because I have the $1 million question. Let's say the roles were reversed. We all like to do hypotheticals, right? So let's do a hypothetical on Sports Way with Dre Day Podcast. Let's do the hypothetical. Suppose LSU lost this game. Suppose they lost and Iowa won. Same score and everything. Forget the whole playing hard and it being a nail biter. Suppose LSU lost and Iowa won. You think the first lady would have said that? You think the first lady would have said, you know what? I'm going to ask Joe if LSU can come along with them. I think we all know the answer to that question. And the answer to that question would be an absolute hell to the no. We all know it. And the crazy thing is, this tournament has been so wonderful. It's been so amazing. The whole tournament. And race played a factor in it. It did. Dawn Staley, the head coach of South Carolina, after their loss, she sat at that podium, congratulated Iowa on their victory, but she also let it be known that through her friends that are in the media, found out that some people within the media was talking down on the girls from South Carolina, calling them thugs, calling them monkeys, calling them bar fighters, all these names that you can think of. They said that about these girls from South Carolina. Now, it's unfortunate that, especially those last two games, we can't even talk about the games. It has to be about race. A lot of history was made in the Final Four and the National Championship game. Almost 9 million people. Almost 10 million people viewed that National Championship game with LSU and Iowa. So many records were broken. That was the most viewed game in women's college basketball history. That game was viewed more than any Major League Soccer game ever. More than any Stanley Cup game since 1973. Viewed more than the Orange Bowl and the Sugar Bowl combined. And Alabama was in the Sugar Bowl, and we know how much Alabama gets a lot of love and hate in America. Thursday Night Football had more views than that. The 2021 NBA Finals, you know, the one with, you know, the Suns in Milwaukee. Yep. More viewers than that. The 2020 World Series. That's when the Dodgers won it. That was the pandemic World Series, you could say. The finale of The Last of Us and the most recent NBA All-Star Game, Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and the Pro Bowl. That's what these women did as far as viewers. They did more than all of that shit. We've been saying for years, they need the opportunity. They need eyes on the game. And then when they get it, this shit happens. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Just sad. Just sad. Now, to Andrew Reese defense, she let it be known. They're not going to the White House. They're not going. They want to go to the Obamas. Now, good luck with that one because, you know, the Bidens and Obamas are, I would believe that they're close. And lately, I haven't heard anything from Barack and Michelle. So I'm quite sure they're on some keep us out of this How did we get into this? But it's funny because I had read something where the first lady wanted to see Iowa and LSU before the game. And LSU turned her down. And the reason being was because they didn't pick them to win the national championship. Now, I could be petty too, but that's ultra petty. Like, just because they didn't pick y'all to win the national championship, you didn't let her see y'all? Like, damn. That's tough. Like that's tough as hell. But funny none the least. But again, congratulations to both national champions. The LSU Tigers and the male UConn Huskies. Congratulations to both schools. Congratulations to both programs. Now the question is, can they spin the block and repeat next year? Only time will tell. Caitlin Clark, she will be a senior next year, so I know she's going to be calling for blood. And Caitlin Clark, I'm not painting her out to be the victim. Again, she started all this with her trash talking. But I have no problem with it either, because it's the spirit of competition. You trash talk. That's what you do. I just don't like the fact that when she did it, it was okay. But when Angel Reese, a young black woman, does it, now it's a problem. Double standard. Selective outrage. Complexion for the protection for the collection. All those things that you can think of, that's what that was. And I had a problem with it. Have a problem with it. Not had. Had would be like past tense. Have a problem with. But, you know, people just need to do better. And I'm not talking about Caitlin or Angel. I'm talking about the people out there that's the first to complain about something. Y'all need to do better. Get your panties out of get your panties out of bunch. Do something like do something with your life instead of bitching and complaining about trash talking. There's plenty of other things in this country that you need to be worried about aside from two women playing a game of basketball, trash talking, and it's a problem. Y'all motherfuckers need to kick rocks. But yeah, I'm off that. But also this past weekend, WrestleMania took place. WrestleMania 39. You had night one and you had night two. Now again, I'm not going to sit here and dive deep into all of the matches. I will say which matches I love the most. I will tell you which matches I love the most, and that would probably be that would be that. You know what I'm saying? Now, night one. Listen, Austin Theory and John Cena. Listen, I knew Austin Theory was gonna win. Okay, I'm glad that that match was first because you basically got the weak match out the way first. Now, I'm sure Cena might have had other engagements. That's why they chose for that match to go first. I'm okay with that. I knew Cena wasn't going to win. He's a part-timer now, so there was no need to put the belt on him. You want to keep having Austin Theory's character grow, so you definitely want him to win the match, and he did. I'm okay with that. Next was the showcase match. The Fatal 4-Way Tag Team Match. You had Street Profits, Braun Strowman and Ricochet, Alpha Academy, and the Viking Raiders. I picked the Street Profits to win. I felt like they needed this win, and I was very much impressed by all four teams. I was a little iffy at first. I thought three teams would show up, and one would just be there just to be there. All four teams showed up. Each member of each team brought something to the ring and showed out. This was definitely one of the highlight matches of night one. For sure, for sure. I was 2 for 2 so far. Next, we had Seth freaking Rollins against Logan Paul. Now, my last episode, y'all already know how much I love Seth Rollins. And I also said I couldn't wait for his ring. I couldn't wait for his entrance because I knew the crowd was going to go ham when his theme comes on. He had an orchestra man, you know, orchestrating before he even came out. To the point that before the match even started, all Seth Rollins had to do was stand in the middle of the ring and the crowd was uttering his theme music. Now again, Logan Paul, I said this before, since he has done some of his matches in WWE, I have been impressed. Every match he has been in, I've been impressed. You can add this match to that equation as well. He had the tag team match with The Miz against the Mysterios last year. I was impressed. His crown jewel match with Roman Reigns, I was impressed. And now this. He's 3-for-3 in WWE. Oh, and the Royal Rumble. I forgot about the Royal Rumble. So 4-for-4 for that matter. Now I'm 3-for-3. I won my first three picks. Next, we get the six-woman tag. We get Trish, Lita, and Becky Lynch against Damage Control, which is Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky. As much as I was looking forward to this match, this was one of the worst matches on the card in total. Not just night one, night two as well. I love me some Lita. Attitude Era, one of the greatest women superstars in the history of WWE. Watching her perform, she looked stiff. She looked old. I think she needs to hang it up now. But see, here's the thing. She's one half of the tag team champs. So what she really needs to do is really, really, really buckle down and get her cardio back up. Because I really don't see her title length with Becky Lynch being long. I could definitely see them losing the title later on down the line against Ronda and Shayna Baszler. I hope I'm wrong because I really don't care for them, but I'm hoping I'm wrong. But me personally, I was really rooting for Damage Control. I was really hoping that they would win this match because I felt that they need this in the worst way. They've been on a losing streak as of late, whether it was losing the tag titles or even Bayley losing. I felt like they needed this win in the worst way. And unfortunately, we didn't get that. Fast forward to Raw. Io Sky and Dakota Kai is in the match. Not once did they mention Bayley the whole time during the match. Corey Graves, whoever the guy is that does commentating with him, Bayley's name was not mentioned not once the whole time. Now, there are some rumors out there, and then Bayley didn't help with, you know, her Instagram post talking about this is one love story that's not going to end on a good note. Bye. I don't know if this is a sign that she's asking for her release with WWE because, as we all know now, the old fart, Vince McMahon, supposedly is back and creative control. And if you watched Raw on Monday, you might got a glimpse of that. But anyway, back to WrestleMania. Next, we had Rey Mysterio and Dominique Mysterio. Now, me personally, I was looking forward to this match for one reason. I was only looking forward to this match for one reason. I wanted to see how Dominique was going to come out. That's why I was looking forward to this match. Because he was giving little teasers. Sitting in the low rider. Who used to sit in the low rider? Eddie Guerrero, right? So I'm thinking he might pull up in the low rider. He might play Eddie's music. That's what I was waiting for. That would be the ultimate heat for him to do that. He did something the opposite. He came in a corrections paddy wagon, handcuffed, had a Mysterio mask on, then took it off, had police escort him to the ring. Then Mysterio, he pulled out the lowrider. Snoop drove him to the ring. I thought that was dope. But me personally, I'd have preferred Dominique be the one to do the lowrider. I enjoyed the match. I liked how the family got involved, which I kind of figured was going to happen. I enjoyed the match. And yes, I wanted Rey Mysterio to win, which I knew he was going to win. I mean, the man just got inducted in the Hall of Fame. So did y'all really think they was going to have his son go over? No. Next, we get, in my opinion, one of the best matches on the card. Potentially, match of the night. Possibly. And that would be for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And that would be Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair. That match was amazing from beginning to end. There was not no dry spot. There were some areas in the match where I was like, whoa, was that a botch? I remember one stint where Rhea Ripley did a suplex to Charlotte on the top rope. And it's kind of like Charlotte was getting ready to do a moonsault. And Rhea got up on the top rope and suplexed her. But it looked like Charlotte was still trying to do the moonsault and her head hit the floor. That shit looked very dangerous. Very dangerous. But they made it work. Amazing match. Amazing match. But for me, the right person won. Rhea Ripley won. I felt that she needed that win. And she got it. Couldn't have been more happy. With the year that she's had, couldn't have been more happy. Of course, The Miz was the host, and, you know, he says that he found it crazy that, you know, he didn't get a match or whatnot. So Snoop had to hype it up. Pat McAfee comes out, challenges him to a match, basically squashes The Miz. Then next, we get to the main event. The Undisputed Tag Team Championships. With Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against the Usos. Classic match. Classic match. I would say that was probably the second best match on the card. I think the first was Charlotte and Rhea Ripley. And the tag match for the Undisputed Tag Titles was definitely second. I was a little nervous. Like, dang. Is we going to get swerved here? Is the Usos really going to walk out with the championships? But then when I saw Sami Zayn doing those Halua kicks to Jey Uso, I think he did like three of them, if I'm not mistaken. I was like, okay. They got the belts. They're going to win them. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. So if I had to put a grade on night one, I would say I give it a 9. 8.5 to a 9. The dry spots for me was, again, Cena in theory, and the 6-woman tag. I would say those were the two dry spots for me. Everything else had no problem with. Even The Miz and Pat McAfee, I found that to be comical. Next, we get to night two. They open up with Brock and Omos. Now, again, didn't really expect much for this match. First of all, I didn't think it would be a long match anyway, and it wasn't. It wasn't a long match. It probably got less than 5 minutes. But I didn't know Brock Lesnar was going to F5 him, and that's exactly what happened. Brock gets the win. Next, we get the other fatal four-way tag match, but this time it was the women. You had Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez against Natalya and Shotzi and Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville. I could have done well with this match without Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. They were nowhere involved in this match towards the end, and that's when they... I forgot who it was that they put in the submission. They put somebody in a submission to win the match, but they wasn't even involved in the match the whole time. For the most part, it was really Natalya and Shotzi and Liv Morgan and Raquel. They was the ones that were basically carrying the match. I don't remember who it was that took the submissions, but listen, at the end of the day, the crowd wasn't feeling it. The fans were not feeling the fact that Ronda and Shayna Baszler won that match. And again, I knew that was going to happen. If you go back and listen to the last episode, I said that one of the baby faces was going to win for the males, and one of the heels for the females was going to win. And it definitely was going to be Ronda and Shayna, because there's no stock, there's no momentum on Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville. So there would be no reason for them to win. You would have to go the other way with Ronda and Shayna Baszler. And I love Shayna Baszler. I do. It's Ronda I don't like. I just wish she would just leave WWE and never come back. But that's neither here nor there. Now, we get to me. For match of the night for night two, you can make a case that this might be the match of the night. Gunther against Sheamus and Drew McIntyre for the Intercontinental Championship in a triple threat match. Listen, I wanted Sheamus to win. That is the only title that he has yet to hold in WWE. The only one. He's had tag titles. He's won the champion. He's won the main championships, the Universal and WWE. The only title he has not had is the Intercontinental Championship. So I was rooting for him hard. But this Gunther dude, man, I've started to become a fan of his a little before the Royal Rumble. But he doesn't defend the title as much. Not the way the Intercontinental title used to be defended. I remember back in the day where that was the workhorse title. There was times the IC title match was better than the WWE Championship match. You know what I'm saying? That's how far back I go with it. All three of them showed out. All three of them. Five-star match. Definitely a match of the year candidate so far this year. So far. If I had to say the four matches that are match of the year candidates so far, it was this match, Charlotte and Rhea, Sami Zayn and KO against the Usos, and Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. Those are the four matches so far that are match of the year so far for 2023. Next, we got Bianca and Asuka. Didn't really care for this match, but I did enjoy the fact that Bianca Belair, when she did her entrance, she had a bunch of young black girls, young black queens, young black princesses on that stage with her to have a moment. And it was one little girl in particular that shined brighter than them all. And it wasn't until the post-WrestleMania press conference when Triple H addressed the podium that the young girl that I'm speaking about had lost her mother earlier in the day. And it was Bianca that allowed that little girl to have her moment. Because Lord knows what could be in that young girl's mind. You're coming to WrestleMania and you lose your mother early in the day. And if for Bianca, who's a mother herself, listen, I know Montez has kids from somebody else. He's married to her. Those are her kids as well. So for her to have the brain and the knowledge to say, you know what? Let me let this little girl have her moment. Let me let her feel good for these little bit of, for this little bit of time to get her mind off of what's going on in real life. Was beautiful. So when I saw that, now again, I picked Asuka to win. Because for me, Bianca's title run has been stale. So for me, I wanted something new. I thought Asuka would win. After seeing that before the match, I said, there's no way Bianca is losing. There's no way she's losing. And she didn't. So when it comes to the women matches, especially with the titles, oh, Rhea and Charlotte dog walks this title match. It's not even close. Next, we get The Miz fighting again. Miz fights night one and night two. He was supposed to fight Shane, but Shane had a moment like his father a few years ago in the Royal Rumble. If y'all don't remember the Royal Rumble I'm talking about, I believe it was a Royal Rumble where John Cena and Batista fell over the top rope at the same time and they couldn't pick a winner. Vince comes from backstage, walks to the ring outraged, slides in the ring, tears a quad. Shane gets in the ring, does his funny punches that he throws, runs across the ropes, jumps over Miz's head, and then messes up his knee. So now everybody's in the friends talking about, oh, is this a part of the fight? Is this in the script? Me personally, I already knew he was hurt. But you got to give Snoop his credit. Snoop had to improvise. And he laid the good one on The Miz. To the point where Snoop said, okay, I'm going to do the dog elbow. I'm not calling it the people's elbow. I don't know what the hell Snoop was doing. And the way that he runs from rope to rope, I found that shit funny. Like, that shit was comical to me. Humorous. I would definitely say the Snoop and Miz match was better than the Miz and Pat McAfee match. I'll definitely say that much. Next, you get Edge against the Demon, Finn Balor, and Hell in a Cell. I was very entertained with this match. I'm glad they got the right amount of time, close to 20 minutes. I did my calculation. So they had enough time to go in there and do them. Finn Balor had one hell of a gash on the top of his head. I think he got about 12, 13 stitches. Whew. I don't remember who I said I wanted to win, but I have no problem with Edge winning. Because watching the match again, I said it was only right for him to win because let's think about how they got there. You know what I'm saying? Edge was in the Judgment Day with Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. Finn Balor comes along and then they turn on Edge. So it's only right that he has this match at Mania in Hell in a Cell and gets the revenge on Finn Balor. Not in the mixed tag with Beth Phoenix and Rhea Ripley. A one-on-one match with him and Finn Balor, and he was the one that walked out the winner. I do love the fact that Finn Balor came out as the Demon. Grandest stage, yeah, why not? And last but not least, we get to the main event. Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. Not gonna lie to you, going into this match, I had Cody winning. Me personally, I love Roman Reigns. I just feel like it's time for a new champ. Like, how long can this bloodline storyline go? Now, going into the match, I'm like, Cody gonna win. Cody gonna win. There was moments in this match, I'm like, yo, Roman keep getting up. Like, yo, maybe Cody ain't gonna win. As soon as Solo got involved, I'm like, yep, Roman gonna win. To the point where Solo tried to get involved for something. The ref heard it, barred Solo from the ring. Now I'm like, okay, maybe Cody is going to win. But then I forgot there's two other members of the bloodline, the Usos. Now remember, they lost their tag titles. So now they really got to be under the Tribal Chief's good graces. You're going to help me keep mine. Y'all lost yours, but y'all damn sure going to help me keep mine. They get involved. But lo and behold, here comes Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. They fighting in the ring, outside the ring, inside the out, you know, where the fans is at. So now I'm like, okay, maybe, just maybe, maybe Cody gonna win. Somebody comes to the ring in a hoodie. Turns out to be Solo. Does his Umaga thing that Umaga used to do. Does it to Cody Rhodes. Roman Reigns spears him. Bam. Match over. It shocked everybody. Because I think everybody at that moment thought that Cody was gonna win. And we were all proven wrong. Now again, I have no problem with Roman winning. I just thought Cody was gonna win. He leaves AEW. He comes back to WWE. He gets hurt. He's out for 6 months. I think 6 months. Maybe 6 to 9 months, whatever. Wins the Royal Rumble. Oh, yeah, he's definitely going to win at Mania. That was my initial reaction. Boy, was I wrong. My recap of night two. I gave WrestleMania night one a 9. I give WrestleMania night two, an 8. I can't give two a better number than one because I felt night one was superior than night two. Amazing across the board. One of the best WrestleManias that I can remember in quite some time. That's it for this episode. Your boy is done. It's over with. But thank y'all for y'all continued support. Keep it going. Keep it flowing. Y'all know where y'all can find me. Y'all can find me on Facebook. Dre Day. Instagram. Dre Day 1985. Or Sportswear with Dre Day Podcast. The links are in the bio. On Twitter. Dre Day 1985. Or you can find me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Podbean, iTunes, anywhere that you can listen to your podcast, your boy is on there. So once again, thank y'all for y'all support. Keep it going, keep it flowing. In closing, y'all know how this goes. This has been another episode of Sportswear with Dre Day Podcast. Once again, thank y'all for y'all continued support. Keep it going, keep it flowing. God bless. Peace and love. Your boy is out of here. Peace. What up, what up, what up? It's your man, Dre Day. And I have a PSA announcement for y'all. Did y'all know that only 38%
of African Americans were able to identify financial terms on the PFN index, an annual financial survey. Why is that? Because we're never given the tools to succeed in the financial sector. Will with American Classic Agency has been designing financial maps for his clients to succeed for over a decade for clients on both coasts. With Will, you will be able to create a game plan to get out of debt and create the wealth that you and your family deserve. If you're interested, please contact Will at willspady@gmail.com. That's willspady@gmail.com. Or call him at 443-810-0384.